Okay, good night, Shabbos, everybody. This week it's Parshas Baloska, and we just went through Shavuos, so I didn't have a whole lot of time. I was doing other learning on Shavuos. I didn't have a whole lot of time to look at the Parsha, and there's but I do have some thoughts. They're a little bit half-baked, so you'll bear with me, and maybe even after I dish out these half-baked thoughts, maybe some people will have some comments on how to further develop them. But let me just say the parasha talks about the movement of the Bnei Yisrael as they traveled through the Midbar, and it describes what would seem to be maybe. Well, it seemed to be an ideal kind of experience of man and God, and God leading man, and man in some way subjugating his will to God's will, and allowing the divine presence to lead him and take him where he needs to go. And this is spelled out really quite beautifully in the Psukim, which it describes the travels of the Bnei Yisrael, and it says, when the cloud, which was the cloud that represented the Shekhinah's presence when it went up onto the Mishkan, when that cloud started to move, the Jews knew it was time to travel. And the place where the cloud would dwell, Shom Yachu Bnei Yisrael, then they would know that it was time to encamp. Al Pi Hashem, there's a lot of redundancy here in the Psukim. The Mefarshim talk about that this is really praising the Jews, that they followed Hashem blindly, and it was very difficult because they didn't know. Let's say the Anan would come to a rest in some area toward the evening. The Kli Yakar spells this out. Orach Chaim also, I think, discusses this. So let's say the cloud would come to some kind of halt toward the evening, and they know, okay, it means it's time for us to set up camp. And so the Levim, who have the job, we know the job was described, that was in last week's Parsha, of assembling and dissembling the Mishkan. They have to go through their process of beginning the assembly, the unpacking and the assembly of the Mishkan. The thing is like this. Well, they don't know. Tomorrow morning, they might be leaving all over again. They have no idea what their efforts are going to yield them. They may need to stay in this place for only a day, or for a month, or for a year. And the Pesukim spelled that out. So they had to do all this work following Hashem and doing his bidding as guided by the Anan without knowing when the end is. And the Orach Chaim talks about how there were, in every place in the Midbar, there were, whatever this means, you know, klipos, there were some kind of spiritual husks that needed to be refined and elevated. And so sometimes they needed to stay for a small amount of time or sometimes a large amount of time, really having to do with the divine will, whatever was necessary for them to encounter in their travels. Anyway, it goes on to say, and like I say, the language is very beautiful, Al Pi Hashem Yisu Bnei Yisrael, Al Pi Hashem Yachanu, the Jews traveled according to the word of Hashem, the Jews encamped according to the word of Hashem. Kol yimei asher yishkon anon al mishkan yachnu, as long as the cloud was over the mishkan, they would encamp. Uva'arich anon al mishkan yomim rabim. If the cloud was on the mishkan for many days, v'shamu bnei yisrael sishmeres Hashem v'lo yisahu, the Jews would guard and keep this trust, and they would not travel. Kli Yakar says, even if it was uncomfortable for them, even if the particular area where the encampment was a not comfortable area for various reasons, but as long as Hashem wanted them to stay, they would stay. And then the pasuk says, "Yesha sheyia anon yamim misbar al mishkan, al pi Hashem yachnu, al pi Hashem yiso." Sometimes the cloud was there only for a few days, and they would get up on the word of Hashem, and they would encamp on the word of Hashem. And yesha sheyia anon merav ad boker. And sometimes the cloud would only be there from evening until morning. So they would go through all the trouble of setting up the camp, and then the next morning they would go again. V'na'ale anon baboker v'naso, or yomom v'layla, v'na'ale anon v'naso, or sometimes a day and night, or yomayim et mochodesh, or yomim, or for a couple of days, or for a month, or for a year. V'harech anon ala mishkan, lishkan olav, yachanu v'nei Yisrael, v'lo yiso, v'ala so yiso. The Jews would never go until the anon, until the cloud would take them, and then they would go. Al pi Hashem yachnu, al pi Hashem yiso, esh mismeres Hashem shamor, al pi Hashem biad Moshe. So the pasuk seems to be describing this very ideal and picturesque experience that the Jews really turned themselves over to the will of God, right? Like in the 12 steps, they turned themselves over to the will of God, and however the Anan would guide them, that's how they would go. And they wouldn't even know what would be happening next. They wouldn't know if this was a daily thing, a monthly thing, a year. They never would know when they were coming and when they were going. And that would require a tremendous amount of giving themselves over to the will of God. Now, that's one that's one experience that's discussed there in the parasha. Then we have something very interesting, which seems to go in the other direction. If any of you have a Gemara Yevamos handy, I urge you to get it, because we're about to do a very technical Tosfos, which I'll speak out, but it'd be a lot easier to see it inside. I also spoke about this once before, but this is not something that you could look at too little. So, the end of the parasha, we know that Miriam and Aaron have a complaint against Moshe. There might be some variance in the Mefarshim as to exactly what the complaint was, but the gist of the complaint was that Moshe separated, possibly even divorced, Zipporah, and they found that to be unacceptable because they also were Nevi'im, and they were wondering what gave Moshe the right to assume the mantle of celibacy, which, as we all know, is a very challenging experience to maintain celibacy and still maintain, purity of thought and deed. And what gave him the right to assume that he's so holy that the regular rules of the Torah don't apply? I mean, the Gemara in Yevamos on Samach Beis talks about even a person who's older and already was Mekayim Puravu, it was a mitzvah for him to marry. He's supposed to remarry. A man should not be unmarried, ever. So where does Moshe come off doing this? And Aaron and Miriam are really upset. Sukkim say, Vaitadaber, Aaron and Miriam, Diber Koshas, they are, they're not just a little bit upset, they're very upset. And then Hashem comes to them and, says, how come you weren't afraid to speak about Moshe? Don't you know his nevuah is different? And there's explanations for that too, but Moshe's really on a different madrega. And again, the gist of that is that because Hashem could come to Moshe at any time, and Moshe's encounter with Hashem was far more than just a vision or dream, but it was some real encounter. It wasn't just happening through the Koach HaDimyon. It wasn't just happening through some function of the mind's imagination, but there was a real tangible encounter between Hashem and Moshe, so different than the other Nevi'im. So Moshe needed to always be on the highest level of purity, and he could not therefore ever be in a basically sexual situation. And in fact, the Orach Chaim points out, that's why the pasuk says that Hashem came to Aaron and Moshe and Miriam bepis'om, suddenly, because Hashem was trying to teach Aaron and Miriam a lesson. normally Nevi'im apparently had some kind of warning, or they themselves more likely would have to meditate and enter into a state where they would receive the Nevuah. The Nevuah didn't happen upon them suddenly. Only Moshe had the Nevuah happen upon him suddenly, and again, that rationalized why he had a right to function very differently than everybody else and choose celibacy. The thing is, so Hashem appears to Aaron and Miriam and Moshe suddenly, it's a rebuke just in and of itself, telling them, huh, you see what that's like? All of a sudden, I just caught you. You know, who knows what you were doing? You weren't ready to have a Nevuah, and boom, I'm right here. That's what Moshe's life is like. So don't judge him, and don't assume he operated by your rules. Anyway, so that's the story. Now Tosfos in Yevamos raises a serious problem with the whole dialogue, because you see, Moshe Rabbeinu made a kav chomer. The Gemara describes Moshe has done kav chomer ba'atzmo. This is just on the heels of Shavuos, so it's in Yoni Diyoma, right? We know that the Shloshes Yemei Hagbala, the Jews were not allowed to be sexual, right? Al tigshu el isha. So Moshe Rabbeinu made a kav chomer. He said that this is, you know, the Jews are getting the Torah at that time, and they have to be celibate. I am constantly, Hashem is constantly giving me Torah. It was an ongoing revelation. We see throughout the period of Moshe's lifetime, he's getting Torah from Hashem. So I also have to be celibate. This is his kav vachomer. It's a very reasonable kav vachomer. Making matters even more powerful, the Gemara says that Hashem agreed with Moshe's kav vachomer. How do we know that he agrees? Because after Kabbalah Satorah, Hashem says to Moshe, Vahato po amodi madi, and you stay with me. The rest of the people can go back to their regular routine, and go back, shuvu lechem lo aleichem, everybody go back to their family life, i.e. that now they're permitted to be with their wives. And you, amodi madi, you have to remain in this elevated status of, you know, that you added Kabbalah Satorah, and you can no longer be with a woman. So really, Moshe has a pretty clear directive. So Tosfos's question is, why did Aaron and Miriam, Lama Kasu, I love Aaron and Miriam, right? Why were they upset? I mean, they also heard Atah Po Amodi Madi, right? And then he has another question also. Tosfos' second question is, why did they wait until later to be upset with Moshe? Because the events at Kabbalah Satorah were way earlier, and he was stayed away from his wife. And now all of a sudden over here, a long time later, at Chatziros, is when they're upset with Moshe. So why did they wait? So Tosfos' answer is like this. He says, Shlonis Gabalahem Elabosisha. They only found out about Moshe's celibacy at Chatziros. As you might remember, or you'll see if you look at this week's parsha, what happens is that Moshe can't anymore. He says to Hashem, I can't bear this burden of carrying the Jews on my own. And Hashem says, okay, I'm going to make other Nevi'im too. And the 70 elders became Nevi'im too. So then Miriam says, makes a comment, and she says, Ashrei nishosei nishal elu, shiris bak shalugadula. So Miriam makes a comment, and she says, isn't that wonderful? How fortunate are these people, the wives of these people whose husbands reached this elevated status of being a Navi? And then Tzipora says, Amr Tzipora oilehem linshosei nishal elu. Woe is to the wives of these people. Because from the time that the Shechina spoke to your brother, i.e. Moshe, my husband, he separated from me. So Miriam, so Tzipora shares her tale of woe with Miriam, and now Miriam is really upset. So that happened much later. But again, Tosfos wants to know, why are they angry with Moshe if Hashem agreed? It says Atah Po Amodi Madi. It's true that Nasa Moshe Kavachomer Batzmo, Moshe made a Kavachomer, but Hashem agreed. And here's what Tosfos says something really remarkable. He says, "V'yishlomer mishum darminun b'derech she'adam rotzoi leilich molichan oso." The answer is that they thought to themselves that it's true that Hashem did give agreement to what Moshe did. Hashem gave agreement to what Moshe did, but that's only because of the principle of Aderesh Adam Rotzelelech Malichan Oso, meaning that there's something here that goes on, which is that if a person has a certain will, Hashem will allow the person to go in that way. And apparently, and this is really fascinating, apparently that principle extends so far that even Hashem would agree with Moshe's chosen path, even if it was not the utterly and total correct path. It's plausible. Now, I say it's plausible because, remember, this was Aaron's and Miriam's taina against Moshe, but Hashem defends Moshe. So let's keep that in mind, that although they had this taina against Moshe, that was not actually the final conclusion. But it's plausible that Hashem could so allow a person to go in the way that he wants to go, even to the extent that he will give agreement to that path, and to the extent that it's plausible to Moshe, it's plausible to Aaron and Miriam that Hashem would have said, "Yes, I agree with your Kal Vachomer," but actually the better path would be to done something different. And that was their complaint, according to Tosfos. That was Aaron and Miriam's complaint against Moshe. Just because Hashem said that he agrees with you, it's kind of like when two siblings fight about what daddy said. So one sibling asked dad the question one way, and dad agrees. And then the other sibling, who's upset, asked the question a different way, and dad says, "Well, you know, you have a point there too." So then the second sibling says to the first sibling, "You know, daddy doesn't agree with me. He agrees with me." And then the first sibling says, "Well, you know, but daddy agrees with me. He said that." So Aaron and Miriam are saying to Moshe, "Look, you know, you had a Kal Vachomer there, and there is a principle that Hashem says, B'derech Shadam Rotzei Leilich Molichin Oso, and he agreed with you, but the truth is it was misguided, and you should have done better, and you shouldn't have distanced yourself from your wife, and you know what gave you the right to do that." Now, the end is that Hashem defends Moshe and says that Moshe is a special case. However, that doesn't mean that the basic logic of Aaron and Miriam was refuted, meaning in this case Aaron and Miriam were incorrect, that Moshe's judgment was correct. However, nowhere is the logic of Aaron and Miriam refuted that we could find a situation because of B'derech Shadam Rotzei Leilich Molichin Oso that Hashem wouldn't agree, quote, agree, even if it wasn't the best possible choice. That's a very important thing to keep in mind. So it's Moshe and so Aaron and Miriam were wrong, and Hashem defends Moshe. They made the wrong assessment that Moshe had every right to be celibate. But their logic, using the principle of Derech Shadam Rotzei Leilich Molichin Oso, to discount the fact that Hashem gave his tacit agreement, that logic was not refuted. Now, Tosfos ends with a cryptic statement, and that's why I say, if some of you have something in front of you, Gemara Yevamos in front of you, it's worth looking at, because you really have to look at the words. The last three words of Tosfos are very cryptic. So, again, he answers that the reason why Aaron and Miriam were justified, or at least justified to themselves, was because of Derech Shadam Rotzei Leilich Molichin Oso. And then he ends with, V'siayuhu Bevo Latahir, and he was helped with the principle of Bo Latahir. Now, there's another Gemara, right, which says Bo Latahir Messiah Oso. Someone, in other words, there's two different functions. Derech Shadam Rotzei Leilich Molichin Oso, that if you want to go in a certain direction, Hashem lets you go. But Bo Latahir, but if a person wants to purify himself, he has more than just Hashem letting him go, he helps him. The Marshal says, and I don't know if there's another way to understand Tosfos, I'm really not sure. It's a very cryptic statement. The Marshal says that what Tosfos meant was that was the proof that Moshe was right. That actually, it wasn't just Derech Shalom Rotzei Leilech Malichim or so, but Hashem actually agreed with Moshe and helped him. And helped him accomplish what he wanted to accomplish, which was to be celibate, and he tells him, I agree with you, Kavah Homer. Okay, what's the upshot of all this? So let's go back again, and as I said, this is half-baked, it's not fully baked, because I didn't have enough time to really look at the parasha. But in the beginning, as I said, we see this ideal where the Jewish people are turning the will over to God, right? They're turning the will over to God, and however the Anan leads them, that's where they go. And they have no idea. They have no idea if they're going to stay for a day, or for a week, or for a night, or for a month, and they have to go through all the tircha of building the Mishkan and disassembling the Mishkan, and they have no idea for how long that's going to be. But they turn themselves over to the will of God. So here you have that experience where there isn't really autonomy. There's a turning of the will over to God. And then you have this other statement, right? You have this idea that comes out from Tosfos, which seems like that a person, on the one hand, you know, Hashem may agree even and tacitly agree and allow the person to go in the direction he wants to go, but the person makes the choice, right? So it's kind of, it seems to me to a degree, you know, there's a contradiction here. And then we have the concluding word of Tosfos, which is a bolatayr misayin also. And I'm thinking that somehow or another in that last statement lies the resolution to the problem, which is that it is true we turn our will over to God, you know, that that's one truth, or that we should, right? So we have to turn, but we don't have an anan, you know, we don't have a cloud to really guide us and tell us the way to go. So we have this problem that whichever way we choose, as much as our intentions are, so whichever way we want to go, Hashem is going to try to support us and help us. But then you have all the time Messiah and so. Then if the intentions are pure, we get more help. So that's dropping a hint, right? That's dropping a hint that maybe if it goes easier, I'm thinking, and again, this is half-baked here, but I'm thinking, maybe if it goes easier, right, because then you get help. It's not just that you're allowed to go in that direction, but it gets help. So maybe when things go easy, that's a sign. And, of course, you have to have the right intentions because things can go easy because you're a Rasha, Chas Hashem, but I'm just saying, you know, Rashaim have it very easy also. You know, they say, right, a Rasha Gomer, he gets all his Sachar and all his Mazeh. So don't automatically assume if things go easy for you that you're doing the right thing. But if your intentions are pure and things go easy, maybe then it's not just b'derech shadam rotzei leilech malichon oso. It's not just that Hashem is allowing you to do whichever way you want to go, but actually you've achieved that higher level of subjugating yourself to the will of God, and you're doing the way it should be done, like Moshe, not the way that Aaron and Miriam thought, but like Moshe, and you're actually having the ability to go in a more positive direction. The last thought that I have about this, and then I'm interested in anybody else's thoughts on these somewhat contradictory directives, or how does one turn himself over to the will of God when there's also Derech Shalom Rotzei Leilech Malichon Oso, which is that, is it your will, is it his will? It sounds like he lets you do what you want, and it can be misleading. But the last thought I had is that, why is it true, right? I think the important thing is to understand what were Chazal aware of when they said the principle of Derech Shalom Rotzei Leilech Malichon Oso. I mean, what makes that, what's the point? Why is it valid? Why is it true? And I think here's the interesting thing, I think. It's that Hashem will lead the person in the direction that's best for them as they are right now. It's like you can have two children, And one child might need you to be very strict with him. Another child might need you to be more loving and supportive. And each child, based on their tchunas and nefesh, would be energized differently. Now, it could be, you could argue either way. You could argue maybe the child that needs things to be more strict as a result of having a parent who's very strict and demanding would grow much further. Or if you want, you could make the argument the other way around too. Maybe that one's always in a struggle with his father and less autonomous, and maybe the child that needed more support and more guidance in the end grew further because his relationship to what he does is less of a power struggle and more of engagement and self-actualization. Who knows? But the point is that it's not the parent that dictates how the child is supposed to be treated. It's chanuch l'nar pi darko. It's the child that dictates really how the parent needs to treat him because that's the experience that he needs. So it could be true that b'derech shadam rotzeh leilach malichon oso, that to whatever madrega a person is on, Hashem will provide opportunities or experiences that guide the person in a way that's meaningful, helpful to that person. But that doesn't mean that they're doing the ideal. If they're on a higher madrega, then they might need or they would benefit from a very different experience, which Hashem would then provide b'derech shadam rotzeh leilach malichon oso. So perhaps, and this now, this thought has, I think, got a little bit more concrete. Perhaps Moshe and perhaps Aaron and Miriam's tie against Moshe was, you're right, you're not on that madrega. So you're right, Hashem gave you this experience because you couldn't handle both being connected to your wife and being holy. But if you were on even higher madrega, you could have and you should have. And that's their tying on him. Yeah, Hashem agreed with you because that's where you were up to. But you should have been up to something else. Anyway, those are my thoughts. Hold on, I'm going to unmute and unrecord.